Hey everyone, and welcome. This is Yannick Silver, and we have another Maverick Business Insider interview, and I'm really excited to have one of our Maverick 1000 members, Gary Nealon, on. Gary is he's got somewhat of a unique story. We'll let him talk about it, but losing several million dollars on his first business, now having a successful cabinet store. Not a bricks and mortar cabinet store, but an online cabinet store, which sounds like a very weird, unusual thing that you could try and sell online. And then we're going to get him to talk about some of the community building things that he does. And of course, you may have seen Gary possibly even on HGTV on Home and Garden TV, where his cabinets are a regular fixture on some of the shows there. So, welcome, Gary.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm excited to kind of jump in here, and I think this will be a little bit of a different interview for a lot of people listening to this. Get people a different spin on how to do things, and that there's not just one model that works online. But maybe you can start with just a thumbnail on your background and some of your business experiences there.
Sure. I mean, My main background was marketing and information systems, but somehow I ended up in logistics for many years. And after working with some of the top 500 companies in transportation and logistics, I thought, hey, it's probably something I could do for myself. So spent a couple years researching a business, found the right one that I thought, and within roughly a year, I was bankrupt. Not many people can say that, but I actually. Within a year of being in business, we ended up burning through about $2 million and ended up bankrupt. So that's the downside of my crash course in the business. I did everything right, I guess I didn't really do right. But it was one heck of a learning curve.
And what was that first business, Gary?
It was actually a brick and mortar business. It was importing products for the dollar store industry.
Uh-huh.
At the time, it was a booming industry. Of course, right after we took it over is when the cost of plastics went through the roof and petroleum and everything else. So it basically, what the profit margins on it cut in half, and it just drove the business right to the ground.
And so this was importing what, from China?
Yeah, it was importing from China, importing just about everything that you found in a dollar store. So I always thought, the way to go for a business was to find something that was successful and just build upon it. And then I learned about the whole internet marketing aspect of it, and that's kind of what got me to the business that I have today.
Well, I think there's probably a couple lessons in there, too, that would be really interesting for people. So within 1 year, right, you guys burned through $2 million.
Yeah, we bought the business for... I think it was $1.5 million,
okay,
and then
so
we had line of credit for inventory and everything else.
Uh-huh.
It was about a year. We had I thought I did my due diligence. Spent 2 years researching it. Had accountants, lawyers, everybody looking over the books to make sure that it was a viable option. And you can never predict the future with something like that. So it kind of spun me for a loop there right after it happened, but. I saw what some of my friends were doing on the internet, and just decided to learn from take some knowledge from them, and then apply it to something that I already knew.
So where was that turning point that you're like, well, maybe instead of going out and getting another job or saying, okay, well, obviously business doesn't work for me. What was that?
Yeah,
mental switch.
I guess that's one of the things of being an entrepreneur is you always have that gut instinct that you don't want to work for somebody else, and even though that the first business kind of went down the hill. I was like, I went back. I was a director of sales in logistics, so I went back to that, working out of my house and doing logistics. But I always knew that there was something for me to do on my own. So I just kept that, and I just kept researching and reading about different things. Mike Geary was a big help for that. I went to college with him, and he really showed me everything that he was doing. And I was able to take what he was doing with a virtual product and then apply it to a physical product. So that's kind of what spun us into this business.
Okay. Yeah. So the first internet venture was it with cabinets?
Yeah. We had a connection with China. one of my friend's uncles, long story short, was importing other stuff. So he had a connection with a factory, which put us in touch with this. I kind of researched the industry and found out that there were, while there's other cabinet manufacturers that were online, none of them really knew what they were doing, based on the knowledge that I had. So I saw it was an industry that I thought I could penetrate pretty quickly and also be able to offer a product a little bit cheaper than what other people could. So, within a year we were up in the top five for at least five out of the categories that we were targeting. Started seeing traffic, and I just started doing a lot of SEO to drive the site up.
Okay. Well, let's take it from the beginning. So I think that'll be interesting. So you had the connection, you had the cabinets, so you knew you had your product, did some research there, found other people that were selling it, so obviously there's a marketplace for it. And I don't know, I mean, for me, cabinets seems like, God, what a crazy thing to try and sell online. It's a big, bulky,
that's kind of how I looked at it. I'm like, when I first thought about it, I'm like, who's actually buying cabinets online? Like, it just seems like such an odd thing. For me, I personally, I'd want to see them, I want to touch them. It's a fairly expensive investment, and to be able to do that over the internet, I guess there's got to be a trust factor with the company, and so that was my biggest hurdle just in the thought process was, who's actually going to be buying these things? But it's right around that time where HGTV and DIY Network and everything really started taking off, where all these home improvement shows were kicking up, and people were starting to get interested in it. They realized that they didn't have to spend $50,000, $60,000 on a kitchen. They can actually do some of this stuff themselves. So I think that little spike and getting into the market at that time was one of the things that helped us out as well.
And then did you have any thoughts like Zappos, who we've had Tony Hsieh from Zappos a couple times at the Underground as a keynote, and one of the things he always talked about was when they were selling shoes that they started thinking about, okay, the biggest objection to selling shoes online was that is it going to fit or not? And so that's when they added that free shipping back and forth and kind of almost recommended for people to get multiple sizes so they could ship them back and forth. Was there anything that you thought about from the just the product, just the way that the cabinet product would be online? Was there anything?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest obstacle that I saw was, are people going to be able to do this themselves? You get a lot of, I don't know if you watch any of the home, like, I just do any of the projects that they're talking about, but it's breaking it down to a point where it's understandable and where people are comfortable with it. I think that was the biggest objection that we got at first was like, can I really do this? Are they really that simple? So, just through article marketing and even some of the video marketing, just creating, informational products that we can give them to show them, this is really something that's easy that you can do, that you don't need to pay somebody else to do. So that's kind of been our angle on a lot of the homeowners that we target. And then we obviously work with contractors and home builders, and that's a little bit different sell. But for the actual home improvement market, that's what we try to do, is just educate all the homeowners that they can do this themselves. It's not hard to do, and they can get the same look that they would if they paid somebody to do it.
And so that's part of, do they get like more information when they buy a cabinet, or all that information is free and you're just using that as a lead generator to?
Yeah, I mean, everything's free. We try to use it as lead generation. We also, our autoresponders, if somebody doesn't, through the shopping cart, if they back out of the shopping cart, or our sales cycle is a little bit different than a virtual product. I mean, it could be 30 to up to almost 120 days. So, from the time that somebody comes to our site, we just want to keep feeding them information about whatever obstacles they may have in their head about buying them. We try to eliminate that through the email process and keep that information flowing to them.
You're okay if we mention what site it is for people there at home?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's RTA cabinets, so so ready to assemble, so RTACabinetStore.com. And they can check out what you have going on there. All right, so when you first had this idea, put your site up, what was the first way that you started driving traffic or trying to see if this was going to work or not or be a viable business?
I mean, up until probably a couple months ago, everything's been organic. I really started doing a lot of article marketing, press releases. At that time, I wasn't really familiar with video marketing, so I wasn't doing any of that. But it was almost all through, you know, article marketing links, and just started targeting specific sites that I knew had traffic that would be interested in it. You know, all the home improvement websites, and the one thing that, I mean, if I have to look back at it now, that really kind of drove our sales and keeps it driving is the home improvement shows. You know, we ended up through press releases and just through some of the articles I was writing, we got contacted by one of the producers. I think it was going back 2 years ago now, it was the first show that we did. And they really liked the information that we were giving out. And, you know, it was a product that they could work with and fit into their production schedule. So we did the first show, and it took off like wildfire. The producers started spreading the word to other shows and, you know, really started networking within the TV world for home improvement. So we've done, I want to say over the past 2 years, we've probably done about 30 episodes for 5 or 6 different shows. So it's, you know, it's interesting to watch. Every time one of the shows air, we have a spike in sales for that particular product line. So just being able to network and get into a different type of marketing outside of internet marketing or, you know, mail, mass mail or anything like that, it's been an interesting process.
Yeah, and then so the way you got that originally was just sending out press releases to magazines.
I was actually doing online press releases, just you know, targeting the keywords for the press releases that that I thought people would be searching for.
Okay.
I was doing 2 a week, I think, at that point, just sending out all kind of updates about, you know, what we were doing, how we were growing, and, you know, the product and everything else that we were offering, and it got picked up by a company, by one of the producers.
Got it. So what's your favorite tool for keyword research or figuring out what your keywords are?
I still use the Google tool. I'm actually in the process of having something built into our website that'll start pulling keywords for me and actually monitoring traffic on them. But I still use that. I think it's not 100% the best, I think it still gives me, you know, pretty accurate information. And even just
inside their AdWords.
Yeah, inside their AdWords. And it, you know, even our competitors now have gotten a little bit more internet savvy since we started. A lot of them have been, you know, kind of taking some of the things that we've been doing. But I'm in an interesting position where we're competing with like Home Depot and Lowe's. So, it's interesting to watch them and see what kind of things they're doing, and it's almost like a back and forth between who gets to do something first. So, I'm competing with these basically billion-dollar companies, and they don't realize that, you know, we're still basically a mom and pop operation, you know, operating on a lower scale than they are, but we're competing with them on the internet.
Yeah, well, that's what makes it so exciting, right? Is that you got kind of equal footing. I mean, obviously, you don't have the retail exposure that they have, but online, you have that opportunity to come across as the better option because your product costs are probably lower than what they got there, and you can provide.
Yeah,
better,
I mean, we end up. It's amazing if I could just keep spreading the word. I mean, the amount of people that don't realize that it's about 40 to 50% cheaper to buy something from us than it is to go to one of the big stores. So, it's pretty interesting to watch people when they realize how much money they could be saving. They're like, "Holy cow!" You know, like that's a huge saving. So,
right.
Even though they're spending a lot of money with us, just the amount of money that they're saving is just, you know, it's unbelievable.
Well, yeah, that's fascinating. So you never did any sort of pay-per-click or anything like that to get people in the door originally?
No, originally it was all organic. We started doing pay-per-click now, but we're starting out actually with some retargeting and just some geo-targeting instead of going straight for the search traffic and even or the content traffic. I'm trying to go for the fringe stuff first and figure out what works, because the hardest thing I found with our sales cycle is tracking it. You know, you can run ads for 3 months and some of those sales aren't coming through for 3 months. So it's not like an instantaneous transaction like you would have with a virtual product where you can, you know, you run an ad today, odds are you're either getting the sale today or tomorrow. It's a much longer process.
Have you figured out anything or any tool that you think is helpful there?
No, I'm still working on that, and I'm I've actually tapped some resources within Mavericks to figure out, you know, what the best avenue is for some of this stuff, and you know, we're just in the beginning stages of figuring that out, but it's been, you know, pretty interesting and productive so far.
So let's go back to the organic search, because that's certainly how it seems like you've definitely grown this thing. What hints or tips would you tell people that have, you know, a lot of products like you guys do, or probably a lot of keywords, how to go out there and start figuring out if it's worth the
organic
search?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing that I learned is, in our industry too, there's, you know, you can't just go for the main keywords. You've got to go for the long tail keywords. And when it comes to organic, you know, even with Google, the way that they're reformulating how organic searches are found, with that new the change that they made in February, the Panda, or whatever it was called, the new algorithm that they're using. I just constantly keep changing up how I'm doing it, whether it's through, you know, I've figured out a way basically to take one article and spin it, I think it's 8 or 9 different ways now, whether it's through video, pictures, PDFs. So I just do a combination of everything and just get links wherever I possibly can. You know, it helps now that we're starting to get some free links just from the TV shows, because it's, you know, it's once it's put on their website, it's shared by other sites, but
right.
It's just keeping abreast of all the
well, I was going to say have a pretty good page rank and probably have some good
wins. Yeah, they do. So, you know, now we're getting those high page ranks for free, but it's just spreading out as much as you can through SEO. You know, some people don't do it. I know there's, in the information world, there's some people that don't even do SEO. They just rely on pay-per-click and I've kind of done the opposite. You know, we've tried affiliate programs. They don't really work for our industry just because the margins aren't that significant that we can provide a decent commission on it. You know, pay-per-click, I'm still trying to figure that one out just because of the sales cycle. But SEO has always worked for me. So it's, you know, a little different than some other people. But, you know, just by spreading it out and not relying on one source for SEO, just like you wouldn't rely on one source for pay-per-click, it's really helped me stay on top in some of these categories, no matter what Google has done or changed their algorithm to.
Well, I like, it sounds pretty intriguing about how to take one piece of content and then spin it in a bunch of different ways, whether it's video or pictures. I didn't even think about the pictures. That's perfect for you guys, and possibly it could even be used for other people, and a PDF. So, like, for instance, does the PDF get posted on, like, SlideShare or something like that, and other...
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you the full breakdown how I do it. I'm sure there's other people doing it, something similar to it, but whether I write it or I get somebody to write it, I'll get an article written, put it through eZine to make sure, you know, it gets approved and gets through their rigorous process. I'll spin it, put a couple different formats on it to put it through HubPages and Skidoo. You know, I know they lost a little bit of credibility with the new algorithm, but I still think there's some value there. From there, once, you know, it gets approved on those, I'll convert it into a PDF and convert it into images. So then I can put it on Scribd and PhotoBucket. Can then take that same article, cut it into a portion, put it on a blog post on our site, and have it link back to some of that stuff. Then I start pinging everything. So, you know, the pictures, I ping them, ping the PDFs, ping the articles, ping the blog posts. Just make sure that there's as much visibility out there as possible for it. And then I've actually started using a couple different software programs, or at least testing out two or three different software programs that will take that article and then transform that right into a video for me. So it's hitting just about every form of media that you possibly could. And it doesn't look like your traffic's always, your links are always coming from the same spot. So that's
pretty cool.
That's kind of been my strategy now for the last couple of months, and it seems to be working really well.
And are you using virtual assistants to help you with that, or are you doing it all yourself? Or
I was originally trying to do it all myself, but you know, if I had a virtual product, I think I'd be able to do it. But with, you know, between managing the warehouse and inventory and people and everything else, I've started doing a lot more outsourcing. You know, Susan Hill's kind of been a huge asset for me in that. She's kind of taught me all the different ways that can possibly outsource some of them I never thought of before. So,
right.
You know, I've been able to take kind of what she does and really start to apply it to different things that I was forcing myself to do on my own and wasting a lot of time.
What's been some of the surprising things that you've outsourced?
I mean, I always tried to. I knew enough about HTML to be dangerous, so I always tried to do it myself. But now I've gotten a pretty good network of people through Elance or through a couple of the other different outsourcing pages that I have reliable people I could just go to do it. And when you look at it from the value of your time versus what they're charging, there's it's well worth it to outsource some of this stuff, even the article writing and some of that stuff that I would sit here and do myself. It's much cheaper to pay somebody else to do it, and still, if you can still get the same quality out of it.
And what's been your process? I've been hit or miss with outsourcing. What's been your process to manage your outsourcers?
What I've been doing is, let's say for articles, or if I'm looking for articles for a new website, I will try to hire 3 or 4 people to write, give me a block of articles and test the quality of it. And then I'll narrow it down to 2 of them and then keep those 2 in constant rotation. And that way I always have one in backup, and the one that's working, I know I've been able to weed out of a couple different people. So I never just go with one person, because you can never really, you never know how that's going to pan out in the end. But if you keep 1 or 2 in rotation and just keep, feeding them different projects to do, it seems to be a pretty easy way for me to manage it and to keep reliable people on staff.
And do you do anything like, put everyone in Basecamp or anything like that, or to make sure that they're...
I've actually just started using Basecamp because for IT work, I've working with a couple different people for IT, so it's been, everybody's working on a different aspect of the site, because we outsourced the kitchen design tool to one company. We have, I have an IT guy that does all the hard coding for the site, so they've actually forced me to go into Basecamp, so I just started learning how to use it, and I really like it. It's a lot easier to manage people and see all the projects going on.
Right. Let's talk from maybe a 20,000-30,000 foot level. If someone's considering that they want to, so you guys don't manufacture anything, all the manufacturers in China, right?
Yeah.
The only thing you guys really do is market it and market it well, and put your own spin on it. If someone was saying, well, yeah, I'd really like to find the product that I can maybe import from somewhere, or maybe even just from the States, what do you think that there's certain products that work better than others, or criteria that you would tell people to look for if they were thinking about going into this into the e-commerce hard products kind of stuff?
I mean, I've learned a lot over the last year in dealing with hard products coming out of China, because I talked to you about this last year at the Business Insiders meeting that we had in D.C., but I've been working on a whole product line of bamboo cabinets that has literally taken me over a year and a half now just to get everything to what I really want it to be. The hardest thing is dealing with China or dealing with any of the countries that we're importing from now is getting them to understand your perspective on the product and getting all the specifications, because usually when they send you a sample, that's not what you're going to end up with, and that's what I've kind of been learning the hard way. So I've found some reliable people over there that I can trust that go to the factory, inspect it for us, make sure all the products are up to spec. We put guarantees into the contracts now, so I'm finally getting that off the ground. But in terms of somebody looking for a product that they could possibly import, or even a physical product that they could sell online, I'd say start with something that start with think of something that you have some expertise in or a product that you're familiar with, and then research it, see what kind of competitors are out there, who's selling it, whether the margins are good. You don't want to get into an industry you don't want to get into an industry where there's a low margin, unless you know that you can compete on price. Because it's not worth your time and effort. When we first started this, I had no aspirations to have a physical location. I mean, I was attempting to go all virtual,
right.
But once our sales got to a certain point, we just couldn't do it virtual anymore. We had to start carrying inventory.
The lead time was so great that you guys weren't able to keep up?
No, we had worked out an agreement. With physical products, it was harder for me to do just an affiliate program, because you couldn't you know, especially when you're shipping something that's a couple thousand dollars, it's hard to rely on them for the information and everything that you need, especially in this industry. So when we first started, we were going through a third party that was, we were importing the containers, they were handling it and then shipping it for us along with a couple other companies. They were basically like a bulk storage warehouse. And we've got to be just too much for them to handle. So we had to go out and it ended up being more cost effective for us to just start bringing containers into our own facility. So it wasn't something that I had anticipated originally. I thought I was just going to be able to drop ship and do all the fun stuff and, you know, travel and be able to do it from anywhere. And then we ended up getting into the, about almost 3 years ago now, we ended up having to move into a warehouse, and we started out small and just kept growing and growing and growing in terms of size that we needed.
Anything else that you think, I mean, there's obviously so many little details on how to make something like this work, but anything else you can think of that might be a really good just secret or insight for someone that wants to start going with the physical products?
Yeah, I mean, I would, the key is defining one of the things that I found in our industry too, everybody claims to be a distributor or claims to have inventory. I would, if you're going to partner with somebody or to start doing, drop shipping from a manufacturer, from a facility, you really got to research and make sure that they're able to keep up with your demand or to actually supply the product. Because in the beginning when we started doing this, we ran into a credibility issue because, it's just for somebody to rely on somebody else to do everything for you, you have to make sure that they can complete it for you. And a lot of the people in our industry can't do it. So I would just, research the manufacturer, research the distributor, and make sure that they have the inventory on hand and that they're able to handle what you're looking for. Because for our industry, when we first started, to have product drop shipped the way we were doing it, it was unheard of. So nobody really knew how to handle that. And it was a learning curve on their end just as much as it was a learning curve on our end.
Do you think, when you're selling physical product and other people have access to the same sort of inventory, what do you think can differentiate your offerings from other people? So that's kind of where, I always try and think about, okay, where's the differentiation point? Because if we're only competing on price, a lot of times, unless we have a way to buy in massive amounts of bulk, then that's going to be a hard way to compete. Do you have any other factors that you think people should consider as they're just trying to craft their value proposition there?
The way that we've been able to do it, we for a while there, we were just competing strictly on price, but it was getting the name brand recognition. While we don't have the name, a brand name on our physical product, we created the brand name through the TV shows. So if you could find a way to create a brand name or differentiate yourself, one of the things that I tried to do that I know nobody else in our industry has done is we invested a lot of money into a kitchen design tool so that we basically made it a one-stop shop for people. They could come to our site with the dimensions of their kitchen, lay it out right there, and it automatically dumps everything right into their shopping cart. So, if they were to go to Home Depot or Lowe's right now, they have to pay $150 for the same thing. Then if they want to buy them there, they can keep it. If not, they don't even get to keep a copy of it. So we just basically try to make it as easy and user-friendly as humanly possible for people. And our product may be a little different than selling, a physical product like luggage or something that doesn't have as many technical aspects. But I just think if you could differentiate yourself in terms of your image or even the information that you're providing people, it's going to
It sounds like you guys are doing it by the education, right? Because all the
I mean, that's the biggest thing. We try to educate people as much as humanly possible. Whether it's through the software or whether it's through videos or, even something as simple as the receiving process for us. Like most people are not used to having a 53-foot truck show up at their house and have to, unload it and check it and everything else. So, like just the fact that we created a video that walks them through the whole process and everything, it gave them a comfort level, I guess you could say, that they knew what they were getting into versus somebody else that just says, we're going to ship it to you, and all of a sudden it shows up at their house, and they're like, holy cow, what is this? The more information you can feed somebody, I think the more comfortable they are with your business, and in the end, the more they'll end up paying for the product, even if they can get it a little bit cheaper.
Yeah, I mean, as a quick aside story, I've gotten stuck even when I probably should have known better, or I guess it was a lesson learned when I sold medical equipment. One time I sold an entire clinic down in Miami, and it was like 24 exam tables and 24, you know, blood pressure units and the otoscopes and ophthalmoscopes and all the other things that go into an exam room, and I was really excited about the sale. And so I thought I'd take a vacation and go install all the stuff down there. And unbeknownst to me, the trucking company sent over a truck without a lift gate on it.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. We had 24 exam tables, 12 stacked on top of one another, that are about 400 pounds each. And it was me and my stepbrother and this, like, 65-year-old delivery dude who was really
that would be a fun project.
Yeah, that was awesome. So, you know, even something as simple as that, right? I think that's incredibly important, is thinking through the whole process of what happens, you know, even when the customer gets the product, so it's not done with the sale. So that's really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, as dumb as it may sound, one of the things that sometimes you take for granted that people are going to know things that you know. So when we first started, you know, getting questions and everything, I actually just sat down with my parents and I'm like, I want you to just walk through this and ask me every stupid question that you can think of, because you get so used to doing what you do that you forget that some people don't know anything about it. So, you know, just asking people for their input can be just change your perspective on, you know, what information you can provide to people.
Yeah, that's a good one. All right, well, let's change gears here a little bit and let's talk about, you know, I think just some of the cool stuff that you do in your company, whether it's working with Habitat for Humanity or Toys for Tots, Christmas Drive, or you got your yearly sales contest. Where do you want to? What do you want to?
Yeah, I mean, I've always tried to do some of that stuff, and you know, one of the things about Mavericks is always about giving back, and you know, we've tried to partner up with either industries or businesses that we thought could use either the products we sell or we'd be able to add some value to. So Habitat for Humanity was almost a natural fit for us. You know, they're building houses all over the country, and for us to be able to supply something significantly cheaper than they could actually source it for themselves, and us giving back to the community, it was a win-win situation for us. So, you know, they're a little bit difficult to deal with because there's no main office. You basically get contacted by all these different regional offices, but you know, we participate in some of the programs that they do when they're redoing houses. We supply to some of their restores, which are basically, you know, if you have a slightly damaged product, you could take it there, and if somebody buys it, then that money is donated to Habitat for Humanity. So it's a partnership that we've tried to keep going as long as we can here, and, you know, we've done several projects with them, big and small, throughout the country, and it just feels good when you actually get to be able to see the finished product and know that somebody's benefiting from it.
Now, do you guys do you publicize that or make your customers aware of it, or even like say that a percentage of sales goes towards this? Or
yeah, I mean, we try to promote it as much as possible. There are some restrictions on what we can say and do, which I've found out the hard way with some of the TV shows too. but we try to, you know, make light of it as much as we can that, you know, we are working with some of them. We're working on a program now where we actually are going to take a percentage of the proceeds from sales and start donating them to Habitat directly instead of waiting for projects to come up. Because, you know, the only way that we get involved in the project now is if somebody contacts us. So at least if we start doing a percentage of sales, we can continuously give back regardless.
Right. So you can keep using that that nice tie-in, and you're right, it does fit, and that's one of the things that I always try and, you know, just talk to business owners about whenever we talk about, you know, doing good, is it has to make sense, and it has to also come from a place of, you know, authenticity for you, and so for you guys it does make perfect sense. Like, you know, the example I always put up is Kentucky Fried Chicken just recently ran a campaign for breast cancer, where it's like pink buckets of chicken, and like 50 cents of every bucket went towards breast cancer. And while it's great that they, you know, contributed, I don't know what it was, like they it was like $1 million or $2 million that they said was a guarantee. And that's great, but there's no real tie-in, and it really makes no sense there. And it just, I think it weakens that whole part of the give. But yeah, for the Habitat for Humanity, it makes perfect sense. And then you also told me that you work with Toys for Tots a little bit. What is that about?
Yeah, every year it's more of I had always done it before I had the business. It was kind of just a family thing that we did. We always, instead of buying each other gifts, we'd always make a donation to Toys for Tots. So I was, one year we did, the first year we did it here in the office, and you know, everybody started contributing, and then I said, well, you know, why don't we just involve some of the customers with it? So we did that. I think we did that the last 2 years, where we got donations from customers. They could either drop off toys, or they can, you know, give a monetary donation. It's just a great way to give back around Christmas time. We've done it with Toys for Tots. We did it with the Philadelphia Children's Hospital, and try to pick a different organization every year. But you know, it's just a great way around the holidays to feel like you're giving something back to somebody else.
Right. Okay. And then you mentioned to me you guys have a yearly sales contest. What's that involve?
Yeah, we're doing every year. It just seems to be getting bigger and bigger. We started it, I think it was 2 years ago. We started doing a submission contest to, you know, see who did the best job on their kitchen or who had the best story. Last year we did a video contest, which I was just blown away by some of the submissions. I mean, some of them looked like they were, you know, professionally done by a camera crew and everything. So it's kind of twofold. It gets the customers involved, gets them to get them excited about, you know, showing off their product, showing off their finished kitchen or their bathroom, or whatever it is, and also gives us a great content that we can use. I mean,
right.
I've been using, you know, pictures, videos, testimonials, everything from that stuff, and that just feeds me throughout the year. So we're you know, we're excited. We're actually going to be launching the next one pretty soon here, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger every year. I got Mike Klein's team involved with the one last year, and it was just a huge success. I mean, we had it tied in the Facebook and you know, video contests, video submission contests, where you know their friends could vote for them. So you know, an average video I think was getting 1,600 or 1,700 votes. So that's 1,600 or 1,700 people per video that were coming to our site. You know, and ended up checking out our product at the same time. So,
and what were you using? You know, what was the incentive for them to put together a video?
We did a couple things. One was mainly for the entrance, to post it on Facebook and encourage your friends to vote. That was the way, basically, the winner was decided on the number of votes they had. So the more people that they got to vote, the more likely they were to win. But we also had the people that were coming to the site. We didn't want to inundate them with sales information, so you know, we just gave them a friendly reminder after they voted that they can go, you know, see where they got their product from. But we also encouraged them to leave comments and everything else by offering them dinner gift cards and different things. I think one week we did a Home Depot gift card. One week we did a dinner gift card. You know, just different types of cards like that, just to give them something for voting.
Oh, so that's even for the voters. And what are the people who made their submissions? What was their big carrot?
Oh, the winning video last year was $5,000.
Oh, okay.
So
yeah, that's pretty decent.
Yeah, I mean the average transaction for us is probably about $2,500. So if somebody bought their kitchen, they ended up, you know, basically get a free kitchen and paying for, you know, the labor or whatever else they did. So
yeah,
I mean to me, that's pretty good. So this year we're actually up in it.
Go ahead.
No, this year we're actually upping it. You know, I don't know what the final number is going to be, but it's you know, we had so much success with it last year that I think we're just going to keep going and going with the thing.
that's pretty awesome. I mean, it might even be worth including that in your you know, your sales material somewhere at the, you know, to get them to tip over to the to buying, just saying, hey, and buy. You know,
yeah,
you're included in this.
It's amazing. Even the videos that were submitted. The one, I was just blown away by it. So we use it in all our marketing material. You know, you'd have to see the video, but there's just this little girl and just the storyline that they put into it. And it's, you know, it's funny. It's everything. And it talks about our business and how we help them. And, you know, I don't think I could have hired a company to make one better than what they made. So, you know, we use it in all our emails and everything else.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be pretty interesting if, you know, tie it into like some sort of quarterly, you know, do a smaller quarterly contest. Said the average order is like 2,500. If every quarter you guys gave away 2,500, And it was almost like, okay, you can get your kid your dream kitchen for free. And, you know, we're going to run this contest at this point, and it's closing on this date. And
well, yeah, the interesting thing is, I mean, the contests that we've run have always been for people that had already bought from us and they were telling their experience.
Right.
But we're actually, I think what we're ultimately going to do either this year or maybe next year is do it for people that either can't afford it or really have a nightmare of a kitchen. So more or less do a, you know, explain why they really need the kitchen.
That'd be pretty interesting. Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah,
kind of put the opposite spin on it. Like, why do you need our cabinets instead of, you know, your cabinets are great because we already installed them. So I don't know if we're going to do it this year or if we'll do a quarterly one, but that would be interesting to see what the results are from that.
Yeah. Actually, there's one other thing I want to talk about before we get into maybe some lifestyle stuff is, I forgot to ask you about the other market you have, which is not direct-to-consumer, but business-to-business. So since it sounds like you guys have such great margins, it sounds like you guys started selling direct to contractors, too.
Yeah, I mean, if I had to give a breakdown, I'd say it's probably about a 40% contractor, 60% homeowner. We've really marketed our product towards contractors as well. In fact, we're trying to spin off a side website that's basically just for contractors. Give them business tips, give them different discounts, workout discounts with other companies, but really make it like not a membership site, but basically like a free resource for them to keep them involved with our company. We do programs for buying volumes and different things throughout the year so that if you reach a certain plateau of sales, then you get an extra percentage off. And it's a friendly product for contractors, and really those are the ones that we want to keep happy, because realistically with the product that we sell, it's usually a one and done sale if it's a homeowner. So we can keep in touch with them over the years, but once you redo your kitchen, what are the odds that you're actually going to need one for another 10 years or so?
Right.
So contractors, really, even though they're not quite 50% of our sales in terms of people, in terms of actual volume, they probably do a much larger chunk of our business because they give us repeat business.
Hey, remind me offline that I can want to hook you up with someone that used to be like the marketing guru to contractors.
Okay, yeah, that'd be awesome.
I don't know if I've ever told you about him or not. But yeah, so after this, just hang out for a sec. All right, well, let's talk a little bit about lifestyle. So I know, the Maverick Business Insider, our big summer extravaganza event. You were there, were you there 2 years in a row?
No, actually, last year was my first
year. Last year. Okay. And then you came skydiving with us, right?
Yes.
Interesting
experience.
Yeah, yeah, especially with some crazy chicken suit involved.
Very good when the guy that you're jumping out of the plane with tells you that you're exceeding the weight limit for the parachute, so he's not sure how it's going to go. not something you want to hear before you jump out of a plane.
Definitely not something you want to hear. At least it's strapped to you, so it's not. If you guys go down, it's together.
Yeah, you just go down a lot faster.
Yeah. Talk about what's your take, your philosophy on lifestyle, and how I think all of us could probably work 24/7, but what's your take on what's important and how do you balance?
Yeah, I mean, it's true. I mean, the thing about owning your own business is you could literally find something to do 24 hours a day, and it's something that if you don't get away from every now and again, I think you really do get burnout on it. I spent last year, I did a lot of traveling last year, probably more than I really should have, but you got to get away, you got to experience life. I mean, that's what we're in business for is, you become an entrepreneur so that you can make the money that you want to make and ultimately have the lifestyle that you want. And you can't be all work. I mean, you really got to mix stuff in there. So, just like I think everybody else in Mavericks, I've kind of got my list of different things that I've been checking off of adventures that I wanted to do and different things I wanted to see and do. And, I've been lucky enough that the business has taken off to the point where I can afford to start doing some of that stuff. So,
Wait? Gary, you think people should wait until they have their business kind of locked in and that they can afford to take off, or has that been always a constant thing for you that you're always making?
I think it's person specific. I mean, it's all what your comfort level is. I mean, I kind of have a different perspective on it, I think, because I went through one business that was a complete bust. So now yeah. I've I've always got that lingering in the back of my head that I just, you know, at all costs, I'm going to make sure that nothing, you know, that I don't let that happen to this one. So I think it's all in your comfort level. You think you got to balance out work with that, and if you can find a way to outsource and kind of take some of the workload off you and still make the money that you're, you know, the margins that you need and everything else, I think you should do it as soon as your comfort level says so. For me, it took a while just to get comfortable that, you know, okay, the business is on stable ground. It's, you know, we've never had any debt in this business, so it's, you know, it's a pure profit business at this point. So it's given me that luxury to be able to travel now.
Right. Okay. And then you talked about having your list put together. Where what kind of items are on your list right now, and how'd you come up with it?
You know, it's always a work in progress. I just keep adding things as I go along here. But you know, just getting the, you know, the World Series, the Super Bowls, all the big sporting. I've always been a big sporting guy, so getting across all them off my list has been pretty cool. You know, I don't have some of the crazy adventures that some of the other Mavericks have on my list, but you know, wrestling with lions
or
deep diving at the North Pole or anything like that really wasn't one of the things I considered. But yeah, so I just keep adding and subtracting things as I go along here, and it's just fun to be able to cross some of that stuff off.
And what's the coolest stuff that's on the list that you've crossed off so far, as the World Series and some of the sporting events?
Yeah, I mean, some of the sporting events, you know, I went out and got the car that I always wanted, so that was pretty cool to be able to do that. You know, it's some of the things that I always wanted to do aren't as exciting. You know, they're not super adventurous, but yet, you know, they're important to me in terms of different things for my family and being able to do different things for family members and friends and stuff. So, you know, being able to share some of that with them was one of the things that I always wanted to be able to do.
Yeah, no, and I think that's incredibly important. Is it's everyone's list and what, you know, what the lifestyle is going to be unique to them. And while, you know, jumping out of airplanes and diving with sharks is one person's lifestyle, but, you know, I think you said it perfectly. It's, you know, the things that are important to you, and that's what makes a list. All right, great. So this car that you've always wanted, are you going to be driving this down to the summer extravaganza event this year?
I might. I actually had it last year. I bought it last year, and it's been pretty fun to drive.
All right.
So,
awesome. Are you gonna be coming back down for it?
Yeah, actually, I think I am.
Okay, great.
I'm planning on it at this point.
Okay.
The only variables that I have are things that go wrong in my business. So, provided nothing major happens, I'm down there.
All right, so I don't know what date we're going to release this video, but hopefully it's before the event, so you guys will be able to hang out and meet Gary and probably some of the other Maverick 1000 members that are coming out. And then once again, the website is rtacabinetstore.com. If you're in the marketplace for cabinets, or anyone you know is thinking about a kitchen remodel, or you guys do bathroom cabinets too, right, or just kitchen?
Yep, kitchen and bathroom.
So if you're in kitchen or bathroom remodel, this is the spot to go. It's your secret stash for about 30, 40, 50% off. What you can get it at Home Depot or Lowe's or wherever. Any final thoughts or words you want to leave us with?
No, I mean it's just been a fun roller coaster ride so far, and you know, luckily it just keeps going up and up for us. So you know, I think it's something that's attainable for just about anybody if you put your mind to it, to be honest.
Yeah.
With you. Especially after, you know, going through a really big low all the way to a big high. You know, I've seen both sides of it. So, you know, for anybody that's aspiring to have their own business or to launch something that they don't think they can, I could tell you that you can do it.